Blog Talk Radio.
It is anything. It is everything. It is the Buck Gritano Podcast. Ancient alien theory. Ancient civilization. Spirituality. Mythology. Reality TV. Reality TV star. Current events. Not so current events. Comedy. Religion. Music. Authors. Sports. If it's hot and if it's happening, it's right here, right now, on the Buck Gritano Podcast. And now, here's the man who makes Stream of Mind a streaming sensation, Buck Gritano.
Welcome everybody to Pass. I'm about to say Pass the Buck, sorry. Welcome to What the Buck. Tonight's guest, award-winning author. Like to welcome in Brian Godawa to the show, award-winning author, screenwriter. You talk about Brian. I'll be honest with you. I checked out one of his books and I just got like so entrapped into it. Actually, I started with a book three of a set of books, which is probably they're not too smart. But let's welcome Brian Godawa in. How you doing, Brian?
Great to be here, Buck. It's great to be on the What the Buck Show.
That's what I'm talking about. It's like when you did your audio books. I really got into it. If people follow the show for the last couple of, I don't know, over a year or so, I did horse racing for almost 7 years. I covered horse racing. But let me introduce real quick before I say anything about Brian. Hold on 1 second. I like to welcome in. I got a new special host with me, a guest host. I'd like to welcome in John Conklin to the What the Buck, I guess. Yeah, it used to be the Buck Gritano Podcast, but I'm gonna try to take him on a mission. We do a lot of conspiracy theories. I like conspiracy. I like the ancient aliens. I like the Bible. I like ancient civilizations. Last week I had a guy on that was talking about military underground bases. So you get the angle, like what I like, you know, definitely different things that probably the normal person doesn't like. So I bring John Conklin in. He did a little podcast himself. So how you doing, John? Say hello to everybody.
What's up, Buck? Brian, how's everyone? Thanks for listening in. Buck, thanks for having me on. I can't wait to hear some crazy shit and go, what the buck?
What the buck? All right, I got to get the beeper on it. The beep, beep, beep. Because I don't know. Brian, let's welcome you in, Brian. How you doing, man, first of all? How'd you get into writing, first of all? I mean, all the books you have out there, you did a lot of screenplays. You were a screenwriter, award-winning. What was it? To End All Wars was one of the things you did. How'd you get into especially the Bible side of writing?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been a Christian for many years, and I've also been a Hollywood screenwriter. And about 15 years ago, my first movie came out, To End All Wars, with Kiefer Sutherland. And, you know, I've been pursuing a screenwriting career since then. But screenwriting is very, you know, it's hard to make a living. You know, there are some people who do really well, but there's a lot of us who, you know, you can be good, but it's still hard to get movies made in Hollywood, basically. So sometimes you have to sort of make sure you got other stuff juggling as well. And so we're talking like maybe 8 years ago, I kind of realized I had a low year, a bad couple years. And it forced me to reinvent myself and sort of say, you know, I got to be writing more stuff than just screenplays. And what else can I do? And I kind of realized that, well, actually, I had written a screenplay for a movie about cool hero that no one had ever done before. And I'd written it because I started doing this research into the weird esoteric things in the Bible that a lot of time Christians are afraid to face, like giants and Nephilim and bizarre things going
on. You're making my hair stand up on my arms and then standing up. I think
yeah.
There was the giants with double rows of teeth. six fingers. Now, it goes back to the Bible. I mean, right from the beginning of the Bible. I didn't learn that.
In fact, the one verse that was always the weirdest verse in the whole Bible for me was Genesis 6, chapter 6, verses 4 through 6 or so. And it basically says, the days before the flood, the sons of God, which are divine beings in heaven, these divine beings looked down upon the daughters of men, saw that they were beautiful, and they mated with them. And the result of that mating was giants, or the word is called Nephilim, and that word means giants. And it's translated literally in the Bible because the translators are afraid to sort of write out what it really means, right? So the giants, and these are not good guys. These are a result of bad angels coming down, violating the division between heaven and earth. They're not supposed to do this. They're not supposed to mate with humans, but they do. And it comes out with, they breed these giants, you know. And, of course, that's kind of weird, freaky. It has some connections to mythology. And a lot of Christians don't like it, you know, because it makes it sound weird. And so they try to explain it away. Well, I wanted to face this stuff, and I started doing research. And I found – look, I believe in the Bible. But I found that there's still this weird stuff going in the Bible. But it all has a theological explanation, one that fits very well with – basically what I call the war of the seed in the Bible. And that is that basically the seed of the serpent, or, you know, the children of Satan, so to speak, those who hate God, they will battle against the seed of Eve, the seed of the woman, which is the Messiah. And basically the Bible is telling about how this line, this seed line of Messiah goes throughout the land, you know, the children of Israel, and ultimately ends up in Judah and in Jesus ultimately. But my point is in the Old Testament, it's these two seed lines, these two genealogies that are fighting, and that's exemplified in the land, in the children of Israel and the children of Canaan and their battle over that land. And so what I did was I said, you know, I want to tell this story because it's so fascinating. I haven't seen it done before. And it begins at the flood, right before the flood. And in fact, the flood was about more than just man's sin. It was about this corruption of the Nephilim and this weird stuff going on. So I wrote the screenplay, actually, you know, we're talking 8-9 years ago. And I was trying to get interest in it around Hollywood. And then that's when I discovered that Darren Aronofsky was making his movie on Noah. And I realized, oh no, I was beat to the punch. And I thought, so how can I beat him? You know, I was wondering if he was going to have, you know, if he was going to have similar stuff to what I had discovered. I since found out that he didn't. He really didn't. He had other stuff that wasn't really even biblical. But I thought, well, how can I beat him? I realized now is my time to write novels and put it into a novel format. And so I put it out a year or two before the movie even came out. I wrote it as a novel, and that's what started me on the journey of what's called the novel series that's called Chronicles of the Nephilim. And the first book was Noah, Primeval, and that tells the story, like I said, before the flood that leads up to the flood. Then I did a prequel called, you know, in other words, what happened before that, called Enoch Primordial. And that tells the story of the original fall from heaven of the sons of God and how the giants first came about, see? And you know, you see all the Bible characters before when they were younger. And then I went to what happened after the flood, and that was the book Gilgamesh Immortal.
Awesome.
And that's the book that you said that you read.
And but I'm dumb, Brian. I'm dumb. I started with number three, book three. Come on.
Well, I'm glad you appreciated it out of sequence, because I try to write the books that, look, they're all connected. And I highly recommend you start with book number one, Noah Primeval. However, each book I do try to, you know, make it in such a way that you can still catch up if you're behind, you know. So I try to explain a few things in each novel, re-explain them so that people won't be so dumbfounded. But Gilgamesh Immortal was particularly interesting because it's the original story, Gilgamesh, the Epic of Gilgamesh, it was based on what we have as the oldest hero story in history. This is a story that goes back to the Akkadians, the Babylonians, and even the Sumerians have stories about Gilgamesh. And it's the oldest source we have of a one complete heroic story of a hero that actually reads like a modern day movie, right? And so I've always wanted to translate the Epic of Gilgamesh into a modern retelling of that story, because it really is a good story. But here's the cool thing. I discovered in my research that there was a connection to that Gilgamesh story and this Bible story that I was telling myself. And it fits in perfectly with everything that's in the Bible and all these weird things with giants and with angels and all these weird things. So what I did was now there are theories. And I'm not going to give away the farm here, but ancient scholars, Gilgamesh, ancient scholars believe that Gilgamesh, the Epic of Gilgamesh, is it's a mythical story. So it sort of tells a fantasy like tale. You know, it's not just history; it's fantasy like. But
yeah, it's like Brian. It's like people 100 years from now finding Star Wars and believing it's real. I mean, not to that point, but you know, I understand what you mean with that.
Yeah, but so what happens is most scholars believe he was a real person in history, and he was a very powerful king after the flood. That you know, and but basically, it's really more like. You know, if you saw the movie Braveheart, you know, where Braveheart becomes a hero and then people start telling legends about him, they think that he's 10 feet tall and has lightning bolts coming out of his arse, you know. That was what they said in the movie. It's kind of that same thing where, you know, legends grow around him. And it gets to the point where in the legend, they believe that he was two-thirds God, one-third man. Now, this is very, very fascinating because it has a connection to the Bible, which believes that the gods or the sons of God, these divine beings in heaven, mated with humans and they had hybrid offspring, which were giants, just like Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh is described as a giant, and that they were half divine, half human. And so this notion of Gilgamesh being part divine, part human really links up with this whole Nephilim concept, that, you know, this idea that maybe Gilgamesh was one of these, you know, divine, have to, you know, hybrid divine leaders in history. And he was one of the first ones after the flood. And so this was the story that I wanted to retell. And I wanted to be accurate to the Epic of Gilgamesh, but also accurate to the Bible. And that's where Gilgamesh Immortal, the novel Gilgamesh Immortal is. If you're familiar with the Epic of Gilgamesh, you'll love the novel because you'll see, yeah, that's all in there. Enkidu, Ishtar is there, you know, Humbaba, all the main characters of the story is there.
His mother Ninsum was there too, right?
Ninsum,
I learned a lot.
Yeah.
I definitely learned a lot about it. Not that you were telling me a story. I know a lot of this stuff was like not a fantasy, because it's not exactly what the poems say, you know. But you made it exciting. You made it into almost like it was like a nice quest. I followed Gilgamesh, and at times I actually felt I kind of liked the dude a little bit, man. You know what I mean? And when I heard of Enkidu, when I heard Enkidu and stuff like that, I'm probably saying it wrong, but this is Buck, you know, what the fuck, whatever. Enkidu, and I Wild Men, and I was thinking, because last week I had a guy on the show, and he was talking about Sasquatch, and a wild man with long hair. I don't know. I heard people around say that maybe Sasquatch, Enkidu was a Sasquatch. Yeah, I probably not, but it's just funny how all these things tie in, all these things, like you said, from Gilgamesh to the Bible, the stories, the pre-flood, both a lot of these religions and stuff have the same stories, but just different names pretty much, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the whole, like you said, Enkidu was considered a wild born. That's what they called him in the text. He was a wild born. And you're right. It's almost like a werewolf or almost like a Sasquatch or whatever. But all through history, there's always been these legends and myths of these kind of uncivilized man. And you're right. I think personally that they reflect, you know, a sort of, you know, a deeper mythological understanding in our humanity of the need for civilization, you know. And the story of Gilgamesh actually is the story of, you know, Gilgamesh, like I said, he's this mighty king of Uruk. Uruk was a famous city that did exist in Mesopotamia, and he was a giant king. But the problem was, and he built, he was the one who built the mighty walls of Uruk. But the problem was, Gilgamesh was not a good king. He was, he basically, you know, he lorded it over his subjects, as many women as he wanted. He, you know, he overtaxed them, right? So he's a typical sort of
the best is Gilgamesh. I'm going to tell John. Gilgamesh was a king, and before people got married, right?
Uh-huh.
He had the opportunity to go over and have sex with them. It's like he's the you know, before you go off with your wife, I'm gonna, you know, take some action here. And that guy is like, what? Like, I don't know, like, if that makes any that's kind of crazy in a way that you have to let the king sleep with your wife and stuff like that. So you listen to the story, it kind of changes a little bit. And John probably doesn't really know too much about I'm actually bringing him into it. I really don't know that much, because John is like a couple steps below me. But all this stuff came to me from different, I don't know, mythological things of the Bible and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It came to me, and it's like so fascinating that the people, they want to withhold this information from us. Like you said, I went to school, Catholic school. I never heard anything about giants. They never mentioned Genesis at all, period. Never heard there was giants.
You hear the Bible, I think, Mary, Joseph, Jesus, you know, bearing the gifts, stuff like that, on, you know, Christmas. That's pretty much what I got out of it going to, you know, Catholic school early on as a kid. But now you're talking about these monsters and these, you know, giants and stuff. This is what the fuck?
So, and then it comes down to, like, no, but honestly, it comes all down from the state of Sumerian texts, like, from what were they called? The Anunnaki. Could that be the gods that you're talking about in this book? Is that, you know, are they the gods?
Well, I would argue, I mean, there is a lot of people, there are a lot of connections to be made between the Anunnaki of the Sumerian texts and the sons of God in the Bible texts. And there are, of course, different theories. I believe there is a conceptual connection. And, you know, I also think, though, that you know, we have to realize that there's some kind of reality that's going on in the ancient world. And every culture is going to spin it in their own interpretation. So as a Christian, I would argue that the most accurate picture is going to be the biblical picture. But we can also fill out that picture from how other people interpreted it. And so, yeah, I think there's a connection possibly with the Anunnaki and the sons of God, as these are divine beings from heaven, and they, you know, they violate their responsibilities, and they go against God, and it creates this sort of war in the heavens, right? So, you know, and the Gilgamesh story also reflects some of these things. So Enkidu is sort of like, he's this wild man that is discovered out in the bush, and he's civilized. And the way he's civilized is this prostitute basically comes and Enkidu basically has sex with her, and she, as a woman, because of the sex, she's able to get his attention and calm him down, right? She civilizes him.
Even did it back then, right? It all started.
Yeah, exactly.
Watchers now, came down and like, let's look at these, you know, these women and take these earthly women. That's the part I kind of, I'm caught at, because I am a Christian. I was born a Christian. Don't get me wrong, but how could spiritual beings come down and have like physical sex with women and create giants without being a person to be able to do that? You know what I mean? Like, I can't have sex with a dog and make a baby. You know what I mean? That's the part I find hard.
This is one of the fundamental misunderstandings of angels that a lot of people have, including many Christians. I had it myself for many years. And that is that we conceive of angels as purely spiritual beings. But if you look closely in the Bible, angels are not purely spiritual beings. Angels have what's called heavenly flesh. They are creatures that exist interdimensionally between both heaven and earth. So in the Bible, we see stories like, for instance, two angels or three angels visit Abraham, and it talks about how he cooks a meal for them and they eat with him. So you see there that, you know, and so they have a physical presence, right? Is it the same as earthly flesh? No. However, it is a flesh that can exist within our realm as flesh, and they can eat our food, right? Also, the Bible talks about how they can have sex with women. So we see that it's a kind of a flesh, but it's not exactly the same as ours. Why? Because it's also a flesh that can, you know, exist between two dimensions and can go into the heavenly dimension and into the earthly dimension, right? So angels are not purely spiritual beings, and that's a fundamental misunderstanding that most people have because they don't read their Bibles closely enough. The purely spiritual beings that are spoken of in the Bible are daemons or demons. Those are spirits that are looking to inhabit flesh. See, that's why they try to possess human beings, because they want to exist within flesh. But that's the only spiritual being that is purely spiritual that spoken of that we know of, other than God, of course, right? So that helps to clear up some things, and it shows how our own biases tend to blind us to things in the Bible.
You talked about demons. I got Brian Goddard on with Buck and John on What the Buck. Now, you mentioned in the book the Chronicles of the Nephilim. I'm probably saying Nephilim wrong too, but Nephilim.
No, that's
Nephilim.
Right. You got it. It's fine.
Okay, I got it. Ding, ding, ding. Finally said something. I'm terrible with that kind of stuff. But you talked about in the book about reptilian stare. I was trying to catch on what you meant by that. A couple of times you mentioned that. I don't know who it was, to be honest with you, but gave a reptilian stare. It may have been what's her name? The evil one. The one from Sex.
Ishtar.
Ishtar, there you go. Like, she was like an evil SOB, man. Woof. Damn, she was kind of scary in a way. You made it kind of scary. And she kept on calling Gilgamesh's mom like a fat cow and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is like cow. Like, why? But what do you mean by that? Reptilian. I know reptilian, a lot of people trace them back from being like from well, help me out. The Garden of Eve, like with
garden,
Adam
yeah.
and Eve. Yeah, with the reptilian What do you mean by that, Brian?
Let me tell you where I get that from is you know, and I know there's a lot of theories out there about, from the ancient aliens crowd, which I'm not a part of that crowd.
I like that.
Yeah,
Brian.
The serpentine beast. Look, here's where all that mythology comes from. I don't believe there are reptilian beings that are in our midst and all that kind of crap. But in terms of the biblical literature and the mythology of what they're trying, the theological messaging that's occurring in the text of the Bible, here's where I think it's all connected. If you go back into the garden, you know, it's a serpent, right? The serpent of the garden. But the Hebrew word for that is nachash. Now, a lot of my learning about this stuff from a responsible biblical perspective has been influenced by Michael Heiser. Michael Heiser, if you want to get his book, it's called The Unseen Realm. I highly recommend it for everybody. The Unseen Realm by Michael Heiser. And he explains a lot of this stuff from a biblical believing perspective. And it's basically this. The word for the serpent in the garden is nachash. It's the Hebrew word for nachash. And there's a complexity behind that word because it doesn't just mean it's a snake. And in fact, if you look at the sort of the heritage of the language of the word and stuff, you'll find that there's a connection to the what's called the shining beings or the shining ones that's connected to the seraphim. And the seraphim are which is what some people believe that Satan originally was. A seraphim is a serpentine-like being that guards the throne of God, actually. And so what the text is suggesting is that Satan was one of these kind of serpentine-like beings that fell from heaven. And he became a representative that because he was one of those, and because he was one of these shining beings from God's original throne that fell from him, right? That in the biblical text, are you guys still there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I heard sounds that made it. Okay. So this is why in the Bible you get a lot of references to serpentine references to the enemy, and it links it all back to Satan in the Garden of Eden. And so, in other words, he's a fallen creature and became a symbol for the serpent became a symbol for evil, even though it was originally, a heavenly throne guardian. Because he fell, he became that symbol. The serpent became the symbol. So it goes all the way even to the book of Revelation, where the book of Revelation, it uses this notion of Leviathan, the seven-headed dragon, as a symbol for the evil of Rome. And he says that it's Satan, that evil serpent from the garden. And so there's this linking of dragons, serpents, Satan, that goes throughout the whole text of the Bible, see? And that's why, I give all my bad guys are fallen angels from – and they all have these serpentine eyes, and I use a lot of serpentine language because I'm connecting them up spiritually to that, original, Satan, Nakash, serpent in the garden.
Nakash. I can't pronounce anything in Hebrew, man. The only thing I can really say is Boker Tov means good morning. Aki, what you are now, Brian, that means my brother, right? So is John.
Okay.
Aki. I can't get the kh, but I just love it all, man. The thing that really catches me, and you're strictly Bible, and I'm the clown that likes the what is it, conspiracy theories and all that stuff.
Okay.
I like the reptilian angle of it. I don't know if it's true. I went on YouTube the other day, and some guy was claiming he was talking to a reptilian housewife. I mean, that's how crazy it's getting now. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
reptilians
yeah, yeah.
Go back, and they're making up and. A lot of it is like made up, stuff and stuff like that. I understand that, but it's easily tied together with the ancient alien, say ancient alien theory. It kind of fits like perfect in a way. You look back with Zachariah Sitchin, he had his books out, and back in the 70s, he just passed away a couple of years ago, but he was looking at the text, probably the same text of Gilgamesh. And looking at it like totally, yeah. I guess, differently, I guess, because it all relates and it all kind of sticks together. It's kind of weird. Like you can go from, like I said, the Anunnaki to Noah, to the way they both had flood stories. I like how you kind of threw both together, which that was kind of cool. Not it wasn't the Anunnaki, but it was thrown together very well. Like you even said, I'm gonna mess his name up. Noah's name, or it wasn't really Noah. It was in the Gilgamesh.
Utnapishtim.
Utnapishtim.
Are these made up names? Or are you?
No. See, I stick to the original Epic of Gilgamesh because I wanted to be accurate. And in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and I bring this into my novel as well because that's where you see how it's connected to the Bible. It's connected to the Bible in two ways. One is that some people believe Gilgamesh is another name for other possible characters in history. There are different theories. We're not sure. But one of those theories is that Gilgamesh is the name of someone who is a very important person in the Bible. And I'm not going to say who it is. You got to read the novel because it's a surprise and it's
and
so
great.
Cool.
No, but it's
when
great
you
surprise.
Discover it, you're going to want to read
surprise.
The rest of the books.
That's why I want book four. That's why I want book four.
Yeah, so
the way you relate this, now I want to explain it to John. It's two different books, right? Now, the Bible had a – which came first, like the chicken or the egg? Did the Epics of Gilgamesh had to come after the Bible, right? Because they talk about
flood. No. Now, let me explain. The historical reality, whatever that is, was what happened first, right? The oldest text that we have is the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's older than the Bible. That doesn't mean necessarily that the Bible got its stuff from the Epic of Gilgamesh. What it means is –
But,
is
Brian,
whatever,
it could be a little
it
bit.
Could be.
I mean, it
sure,
could
they
be.
They might have drawn some things. Moses used multiple sources – but he also was under the inspiration of God as well. So So we have an event that occurs, whatever it is, and then as people spread out on the earth, they all create their own remembrances or their own, you know, traditions of how they interpreted that event. One of those interpretations is the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's the Babylonian-Sumerian sort of interpretation. But here's the point. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, at the end of the story, Gilgamesh is this great king, and what happens is he realizes that all of life is meaningless because he doesn't have a relationship with God, right? And he's interacting with these, you know, fallen beings, Ishtar and Ninurta and stuff. And what happens is he realizes that life is short. He realizes life is short. He's going to die. He's two-thirds God and one-third man, and he's a great, mighty king, but he's going to die like everyone. So he goes on this search for eternal life. And it tells the story of how he goes to the ends of the earth. He goes under the earth. He goes through Hades. He goes through Sheol, you know, and it's this fascinating journey. But at the end of the journey, he realizes that he's still going to die. But then he hears that there was someone who there was this great man, Utnapishtim, who survived the flood. He was the only guy who survived the flood with his family, and that he's still living. He's like 900, 800 years old. And he figures, well, I'm going to go find that guy because maybe he has the secret of eternal life.
What it turns out is
this character, Utnapishtim, is actually another name for Noah. Because Noah is still living after the flood. And that's what – and this occurs actually in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and I tell that in my story. But what he discovers is the truth is not what Gilgamesh thought it was. It's something different. And again, you got to read the book to find out. But that's where he comes into contact with Noah. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, his name was Utnapishtim. And, you know, when you have a historical character – different cultures call them different names, and that's sometimes the trick of history. You gotta, you know, it basically means that our memories or our languages are different, so we end up calling them differently. But if you look closely at the name Utnapishtim, in the middle of his name, there's the word Noah, Utnapishtim, and that's where they think that there's similarity, as there's a connection, and the flood. The flood story that occurs in the Epic of Gilgamesh is basically linked to the flood story of Genesis. And so that I make that connection. But like I said, the truth is not what you always think it is. And I reveal what the biblical version of that is in my novel.
I feel bad for John now, because a lot of these names, I listened for about 20 hours of the audiobook. Actually listened to it almost twice. I skipped through a couple of chapters and, you know, going back, like, I don't want to talk about the story itself, but because I like people to go out there and actually buy it from Brian Goodow. And honestly, you guys will be it's as good as watching any trilogy, any great movie on in the movie theaters and stuff like that. I mean, I enjoyed it. Now I look at the Knower and the Utnapishtim, right? Whatever, I probably said it wrong, but I look at the both of them And actually hearing Gilgamesh's poems, on YouTube and stuff like that, there is definitely a similarity. I definitely can agree where people hear different stories, they're going to come up with different names and stuff like that. And I can definitely agree with that. But the part in his Gilgamesh side of it, the way the boat was formulated, like the way it was, the boat was, I don't know what a cubic is or whatever it is. I heard people say that boat wouldn't have floated. They even said it in the book, which we mentioned in the book. I don't know where they got the size or the instructions to build their ark or their boat. I don't know what that meant, but I guess a square box. But even to the point where, you know, letting the ravens out or sailing, in water, it's the same exact thing. So it definitely has to relate to each other. I definitely agree.
Well, here's what I did in the novel. I knew that people were going to read this stuff and wonder if I made it up, because some of it's fantastic, right? And some of it's biblical, and they're like, what's going on? What did he make up? What he didn't? So at the end of the novel, of each of the novels in the entire series of Chronicles of the Nephilim, including Gilgamesh, I put an appendix where I explain some of my scholarship and biblical research that it was based on. And in the Gilgamesh book, I actually explain, I show a lot of where I show what the similarities are between the Epic of Gilgamesh and the biblical story of Noah, and where these things, what these things have in common. And then I also describe what they, the things that they have not in common, the things that, that don't match up. And a lot of times people don't realize, they think that just because something's similar, they're the same, but they don't realize that the differences can make all the difference in the world. You named one of them. For example, the ark described in the Bible actually could work and could float, but the ark that described in the Epic of Gilgamesh could not, because the way, if you take its dimensions, you're right, it's a cube, and a cube actually doesn't, a cube would not work as a boat in the water. It would topsize and all this kind of stuff. And that's not all. There's lots of things, but my point is that I would argue that the biblical story actually does make more sense logically, rationally, and historically than Gilgamesh. But that doesn't mean Gilgamesh doesn't, you know, again, like I said, there's a, something happens in history, and everyone, every culture has their own take on it. And here's the key. The key is that the story of Gilgamesh occurs after the flood. And you have to remember that after the flood, mankind, when it started to grow again on the face of the earth, and enough people became a population, there's the story in the Bible called the Tower of Babel. And this is really important, because the Tower of Babel was sometime after the flood, mankind started basically getting back together, and they told themselves, hey, let's get together, we can become one, and we can build a tower to the heavens. And this was the connection to the gods. But the creator God was so disappointed that, you know, first of all, you guys were so sinful, I destroyed the earth, and now you're doing this again. So what he did was, this is the story of Tower of Babel, and there's also ancient, you know, affirmations of this in other texts beside the Bible. But anyway, so they built this tower of the heavens, and that's like a ziggurat, and that was a tower to the gods. And God came down, and he stopped them, and he gave them what's called the confusion of tongues, which basically means there was one nation of people, one language, but God split their languages so that they couldn't talk to each other, and they split up, and they created what are now the nations of the earth with different languages, right? So that's sort of the biblical story of the Tower of Babel. And this is really important, because Gilgamesh is part of that, those nations that spread out on the earth with the different tongues. And this is where the Bible sort of is setting the stage for how mankind was divided in the ancient world, but ultimately how mankind would be brought back together again, ultimately in Messiah, Jesus. And that's the story that I'm telling throughout the whole Chronicles of the Nephilim. You know, I'm sort of saying how mankind is brought together ultimately. But that original splitting at the Tower of Babel was God's judgment upon a mankind that continues to refuse to worship God. And that's why throughout history you have this, mankind is constantly at battle with God, doesn't want to worship the living God, so he worships these false gods. And in my Chronicles of the Nephilim, my notion that I bring up is that the false gods of history, of ancient history that we read about, whether it's Babylon or whatever, you know, you read about these pantheon of gods and Ishtar and Anu, and, you know, you can just name them, right? They're Zeus and all this. My premise,
yeah, they're all the same pretty much.
Well, yeah, my premise in the Chronicles of the Nephilim is, what if these ancient gods of the ancient world were actually real beings, and that all these myths were based on the belief that these beings were real? It wasn't just a belief, but there were real beings. But here's the kicker. What if what the Bible said is the truth, and that is that these ancient beings were pretending to be gods, but they were these fallen angels that fell from heaven to earth and rebelled against God and set themselves up as these false gods that the people worshipped. And so that's what my Chronicles of Nephilim is. I tell these stories as if ancient gods were real beings, but they're not gods like that. They're actually you know, demonic fallen beings pretending to be gods, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they're front.
But in a sense, they are gods,
front,
right?
Yeah, I guess they are. If you're treated like one, it's what you're treated like, as people treat them. The thing is, God continually gave these throughout the – and this is somebody that's really new to the Bible. I mean, I know stories of the Bible, but to really look at it, God gave the people so many opportunities to get it right. And Eve came back after the flood. Okay, I'm going to clear it out for you, get it right. And then they come back and they're making towers. And then they destroys that and separates everybody. And then he leads them to the promised land out of Egypt. And they messed that up too, where, you know, Moses takes a trip up to speak to God, and they're all of a sudden they're collecting gold and then making a golden cow. And then he's like, well, I'm feeding you. This is like all you had to do, and this is simple, but humans cannot do this, period. Just follow him and believe in him, and everything will fall in place, and everything will be all right. He's going to take you exactly where he – and he told them, I'm going to give the land back to you. The land that I'm going to – it's yours. It's just whatever I say, listen up. And they refused to do it. So it's a story of them disobeying God, and every time – and then he comes back and forgives them in time. And to, it's the same story where we can't get it right. I don't get it. And when it comes to the giants or the Nephilim and stuff like that, I believe that – I kind of do believe that they filled in as you know, claiming to be gods and stuff like that. But I don't know if all of them were evil or vicious like that. I'm not sure of that part. Maybe. Because I know, like, tales of hearing giants, and I know they're discovering – what is a giant? Is it a Nephilim if it's really tall? I don't know. They discovered a lot of it in mounds in the United States where, you know, the double rows of teeth, the six fingers. Were they pushed out and, you know, settled with these natives? Were they Nephilim? Were they – because I know you came out and you said that it's the Nephilim, and then there was a second generation of them. What about the 20th or 30th or 40th generation of these giants? You know, what's their history? You know what I mean, Brian? I'm just intrigued by that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of speculation these days about this kind of stuff in giants, but let me tell you from the biblical, the theology of the Bible is basically that, you know, the giants that we read about in the Old Testament, this is another one of those things where people have these, you know, speculations and that end up being very biblical. And really the tallest giant that is actually we're told in the Bible, you know, doesn't give all the dimensions, but is like 9.5 feet tall, and that's Goliath. So when we say giants, a lot of people automatically think of things like 15, 25 footers, you know, this kind of crazy stuff.
It's far-fetched,
but
far-fetched.
Really, yeah, there are other giants. There are multiple giants.
I want him on my
Bible.
Basketball team, Brian. You know what
I mean?
Well,
actually that's true. There is scholarly evidence that the Goliath may have actually been closer to 6'9" actually. So the truth is basketball guys could be considered giants within the biblical context, because back then men were on the average 5'5". So a 7-foot guy would be a giant. So my point here is that when they say,
I thought he was going to say they played basketball back in the day.
Yeah. But, you know, my point is that it's not 20-foot guys and stuff like that. It's just basically very tall guys. And, you know, so we're talking 7 feet to 9 feet tall at most. And
where does the formalities of the fingers, and the double rows of teeth and stuff like
right,
that?
Right, the double rows of teeth is a myth. There's no actual evidence for it. It's just legends that people in the 19th century.
I look at it like – the Smithsonian type stuff. They got me brainwashed, man, in a way, but I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But I look at it, like, when I talk about this stuff, it's almost like I'm talking about, did you see the last Avengers movie? You know,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, that's the technology. That's how I speak about it, because I don't know if anything is true or not, but I enjoy, you know, opening.
It's
I like
entertainment.
Hearing people talk. Yeah, exactly. I like
it's
people talking to me and tell me that this information, but I'll take it for what it's worth. You know what I mean?
Right.
I
but
know,
biblically... So I'm getting you from the biblical perspective, and I added some fantasy and some entertaining exaggeration into my novels to make it more interesting. But biblically speaking, there's one giant that is mentioned in the biblical text who has six fingers. So that's a legitimate thing. But there's nothing in the Bible about two rows of teeth. And there's been Jason Colavito has written on this, and he traces this back to basically it's misinterpretations and people spreading legends and stuff about double rows of teeth. There's no actual examples of that. It's just been hearsay and legends.
Because
the
Smithsonian won't let us. But I mean, what about the stories I hear, Brian? I hear that they found this this cave in Vegas, right? And they found all this stuff, and they found Egyptian hieroglyphs in it, but we can't get to see the stuff, man.
I don't know what to think about that.
I don't trust
the Smithsonian either. They're secular, godless people. They often lie to us because of their theories. However, we just don't have the evidence, and it's just hearsay, and it's interesting and speculative. But until we actually get physical evidence of this stuff, we just have to keep pushing, pushing for the truth. But there is no actual factual evidence yet of that stuff. So we'll wait and see, the problem.
No, but
I won't
cut you up. One second. Again, tell me the problem first, Ken, and then I'll ask you the next.
The problem is that, yes, there are people throughout history who have agendas to hide things. And yes, that stuff has happened. Scientists have lied to us. I won't deny that. But the conspiracy theory explodes it and makes it big, grand, and huge, and everyone's in on it. And that's where it just becomes difficult for me to really commit to. Yes, there are questions, but
we're not going to talk about the Illuminati, not like that. We're not going to talk about
right. No,
about
I'm not into that stuff. I'm not into that
stuff.
I know you're not. But look, I'll admit I put some of it into my stories because it's entertaining, and I'm writing
fiction.
You
definitely did. But you admit it. You even say it that it's a fictional, based on fiction and based on the Bible. You kind of combined it together. Now,
I think that's the problem.
Do you get hard hit from that? From real religious people like that say like I'm Christian and why are you doing that? Why are you?
No. Most of them get it. And honestly, I'm surprised. I think the fundamentalist community would not like it, but they don't read my stuff. But a lot of Christians – look, my books have been bestsellers on Amazon, so a lot of contemporary Christians are loving it, and I think they get it. They realize that this is fiction. He's making some points, but it's mostly the theology that's important. I write theological novels, and I'm describing
the
theological message of the Bible.
It's the lesson.
And they
it's the
get
lesson
it.
Again.
Yeah,
I got you, too.
Yeah, so that's why I exaggerate a little bit. I tell some fiction to make it a little bit more entertaining. But there is a danger, and I think we live in a world, and look, this is my message to Christians, and it would be my message to the conspiracy theorists as well, as that there's a tendency for us to believe anything that's sensational and extreme because it's fascinating. It appeals to our imagination. I mean, wow, maybe the Illuminati is hiding this all from us. Maybe they're ready to clone giants.
The Matrix.
It would be exciting and sensational.
We're in the Matrix. We're in the
Matrix.
Yeah,
all this kind of stuff.
I'm probably plugged in next to you, Brian, right now, in the Matrix.
Yeah, so my argument is I don't have any problem with
– But I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I love it for entertainment's sake. But I honestly, I see a danger. I see a danger happening. People are believing anything without facts. And so they're believing narratives that are lies that could result in really dangerous things in our lives. Like, for instance, look at all the lies that the news media spins, and people believe it. And then they start acting in the society. And you've got all these violent mobs that are going on in America because of the lies that they're believing about the president and all this stuff. And it's like, people can start to act with really bad results for believing things that aren't even true. So my concern is we live in a conspiracy theory culture. Basically, people believe anything that sounds entertaining. And
you just threw my whole podcast out the window, man.
Thanks for listening. We don't have any guests next week.
No. Here's what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with exploring entertaining things. From my perspective, we just have to know the difference between, at the end of the day, let's know the difference between fiction and reality, between fantasy and imagination and reality, between that which is proved and actual facts and that which is more imaginative and fun. And I'm not gonna attack you for speculation.
All right, good night, everybody. That was I understand what you're talking about, and it kind of makes sense in a way too. If you're kind of a religious person, to look at it as the point of almost like this, it's like a Satan type thing in a way. I don't know if it's like. You know, God and this dividing and bringing this stuff up and spreading stuff, but that is not probably true. And it kind of divides it to, how do I say it, good and evil almost in a way. But
yeah,
I look at this
yeah,
way.
I mean,
when I do the show, Brian, I do the show and I talk about Sasquatch and the guy's telling me that the Sasquatch is bending trees and stuff like that. And he got a picture of a half of elbow behind a tree. The audience got to take that for what it's worth. Come on. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, we can't find a Sasquatch over here, man. We could find a Bin Laden in a house. And so we can't find a Sasquatch. But come on, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah,
to
I hear you. But here's where we would have a lot in common in the sense of, look, I do think that the Bible does, one of the theological messages of the Bible is that there is a spiritual conspiracy that is with spiritual beings who want to deceive us with lies that turn us away from the living God. And anything that will promote – and look, here's people who don't want to believe in God want to believe, but there's something in control of everything and everything's connected and there's some evil, malevolent being who's deceiving everyone. And rather than believing in a living God, these conspiracy theories can become a God substitute. But that doesn't negate the fact that there really are spiritual deceiving beings who are deceiving people.
Well, who was it that said, like, if a spirit comes, like, don't believe it to be a good spirit?
Paul.
It could be Paul. Okay. It
says that Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. And, you know, this is where you get, you know, people with different religions.
Well, you're right. I give it to you. No, I got it. Because it's like what you said, the hiding that stuff is, it's like giving us the ability to play music, giving us the knowledge of the tree of knowledge, giving us all the good stuff. And this is a form of that, too, because everybody's getting excited. You hear a story about, oh, the aliens are coming in 2018 and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. And I understand totally what you're talking about. You know, I totally
get it.
Well, in
fact, here's my theory. The ancient alien theory says this. You know, this is Zechariah Sitchin. This is all these guys, right? Ancient aliens on History Channel. This is their theory. The theory is, in the ancient past, we were visited by astronauts from another planet, from other planets, right? And mankind was so ignorant, we didn't know who they were, so we interpreted them as the gods, and that's where we got religion. So they're trying to deconstruct religion and make God doesn't exist, but therefore we should worship ancient extraterrestrials from another planet. Here's my theory. No, back in the ancient world, we were visited by angelic beings. And nowadays, mankind doesn't want to follow God, so they reinterpret that as not God, or not from the gods, not from reality, but actually from other planets. So it's a God substitute in order to turn you away from worshiping God, so you'll worship extraterrestrial beings. And so that's
I see that being possible, but could you agree that if I look at that angle of ancient, well, not that. We'll take it on the flip side. We're able to travel to a different planet, 100 years from now, and we come up on a culture. We land on a planet that there's some kind of hominins or humans or not like us, but whatever. But solely not as advanced as us, and we came out of disguise. I probably think they would think that we were like some kind of gods too, in a way. It could be
possible.
But I don't know if it ever happened before like that. But they had the perfect opportunity, the platform with the Bible and with everything else to relay everything in. It's like unless they sewed it together with thread and string, because it does fit. It fits a little bit. And then they go with Enoch, and Enoch went up with God and traveled. And people think that the second Enoch, right? Not the first one, right? It was the second Enoch in the Bible, I believe. There was two Enochs. He got taken up to with God, and he was able to travel to the firmament. Can you explain what the firmament is for me, please? Because that's one. Is that heaven, between heaven? What is that?
Yeah, the firmament in the Bible is part of the ancient cosmology of how they interpreted the universe physically. They believed that the earth was basically flat, and beneath it was pillars of the earth, and that was Hades, and the abyss was the waters of the ocean that went down. The abyss was not necessarily the ocean, but the abyss was the waters below the oceans, and that those waters were all surrounding us, but there was a solid dome over the earth, and that dome was kind of like a bronze or some kind of a solid firmament, and that it protected us from the waters above the firmament, and then that's where the throne of God was. And so they believed that the firmament, that when they looked up in the sky, they believed we were under a dome, and that's why they saw blue in the sky. That was the waters above the firmament. And so they believed it was a solid dome. And the Bible writers believed in that world, in that universe. And so they use that terminology, you know, when they talk about the firmament above and the waters above the heavens. David writes about, King David writes about the waters above the heavens. That's what he believed, right? That's why they talk about when the flood happens, the floodgates in the heavens. So there's a solid dome and there's floodgates that open up for the water to come out to flood the earth. So, you know, a lot of people think that that then discredits the Bible because the Bible has an inaccurate scientific picture. But I don't think the Bible's intent was to communicate an accurate scientific picture of the earth.
Yeah, I agree.
Its point was to describe relationship with God. And the men who wrote the book, God was communicating to men who weren't as scientifically aware as we were. But that wasn't the point. The point wasn't science. The point was always spirituality. So I don't have a problem with their – I don't have a problem with their inaccurate pictures, but people think that that discredits the Bible, but I don't think it does.
No, not at all, because I don't think they were that far advanced in science. And I don't even think that the scholars or whoever they were advanced enough to understand what it meant. I just heard that a lot. I would hear that a lot in the Bible or on all sides of my research. And some stuff not the stuff that you like to research. You know what I mean? I got you. I'm sorry, man. Listen, you did a lot of books. You wrote how many books so far? How many books did you write?
Well, Chronicles of the Nephilim have 8 novels in them. It begins with Noah and Enoch, and it ends with Jesus. And it basically, the whole premise is I'm retelling stories in the Bible where they talk about giants. Now, there's not a lot said about them in the Bible, so I have to fill in with fiction. But I try to be true to the Bible, fill it in with some fiction and some spiritual warfare, and sort of show what's going on in the spiritual world. And so I'm telling those stories, retelling them from the Bible. And there's 8 books total. And the truth is I think people from all stripes will appreciate them. If you just love the Bible, or if you love some of the fantastic stuff like you're talking about, both sides can draw something to appreciate from it. And in each of the novels, I have an appendix where I explain sort of what's the historical and biblical foundation that the fiction was based upon.
And that was just as good as the book, to be honest with you, I listened to the Chronicles of Nephilim. I mean, with Gilgamesh.
A lot of people say that.
It was perfect because you actually went into both. You said that in the Bible, and then and you kind of flipped it both ways. And it was fine, and I like how you definitely changed the story of Gilgamesh from the simple, you know, whatever, to something really cool. And then you came back at the end of it with a little. You can't leave. Like it's like one of them Marvel movies. If you leave,
there's a huge twist.
I'm sure that ties into the next couple.
Totally. People will love it.
I got to get on that. I got to get the next one because I started with book 3. So don't do that, everybody. Start with book 1. Start with Noah. And was there something about Noah? I'm going to give you a little bit of my ancient aliens touch flavor, whatever. I don't consider myself ancient alien. Conspiracy. Was Noah considered an albino? Was he light albino, or was he giant? Was he a Nephilim?
That's really interesting. Okay, the reason where you got that from was in the ancient world, there's lots of texts out there that aren't in the Bible, but there are texts that, they've even found at the Dead Sea Scrolls, right, at Qumran. And there's a book called The Book of the Giants. And there's some text.
You'll never see that at all. You don't see that book. That's like, ooh, where's the Book of the Giants? No, I don't see the Book of the Giants.
No, you can get it. You can get it. It's been around.
You can get it?
It's been around.
Okay. I got to get it.
No.
I'm new to it.
But what you're talking about is there's some legends, basically. So basically the Jews didn't have just the Bible. They also wrote a lot of legends. They took biblical characters like Abraham and Noah, and they expanded on them. And they said, oh, you know, they made up stories that would, you know, they tried to be consistent, respectful for the Bible. This isn't scripture. This is just legends that they created. And so what you're referring to is there are some legends around Noah. And one of the legends in one of these ancient texts was that when Noah was born, he glowed white like a, you know, heavenly, and that was to show how that he was God's chosen one. And some people misinterpreted and said, does that mean he's a giant? He's going to be a giant, you know, or he's a Nephilim. And but the text says, no, he wasn't. It just shows that he was the Holy One of God. But this is where some of these legends come from, you know. But in the biblical text itself, the main premise was these are a time of days of corruption. These angels from heaven are mating with women. They're corrupting the seed line of humanity because they're trying to corrupt the seed line of the Messiah, right? And the Nephilim are coming. And so in this time of corruption, the Bible says in Genesis 6, verse 9, these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Now, that word blameless is interesting because the Hebrew word for blameless is actually talks about without corruption, like the sacrifices that they made in the temple were holy and without corruption. So he's basically saying that Noah was not. The Bible was saying very specifically that in these times of fleshly corruption with the sons of God, Noah was not one of those. He was a pure human. So biblically speaking, it says he's pure human to show that he's not one of the corrupted ones.
Yeah, so the angle of it, he's not albino, like the albino.
No.
Like, you ever see the Benchwarmers? The movie, I forget who was in it. Like, it's an old baseball movie.
Yeah.
The guys, and it was the guy pitching, the Spanish guy. He's like, hey, albino. Maybe the cute guy was hiding in the closet. And he was, well, this is a little off the beaten path right here. But, nah, you remember that? albino. But, all in all, let's get these songs. Now, we know how you got into, because you said that you did screenwriting and stuff like that. Now, at all these books, which one are you, I mean, at a series, which one are you most proud of, you think, out of all of them? Like, I mean, that's kind of a silly question, but which one makes you the proudest that you did?
I've done hundreds and hundreds of hours of research with each book, and I got to be honest, I know this is going to sound canned, but it's not. Every time I wrote a book, it was my favorite book because I just kept discovering more fascinating things in my research that blew my mind. And so truthfully, everyone was my favorite book as I wrote it, all eight of them.
Can you do me a favor then?
Yeah.
Can you give me the different voices of a couple of people? I mean, I know. Come on, you got to do that for me.
I don't know if I can remember.
Ishtar. Like, she was like, you're the cow. You're gonna, but and she couldn't wait for what's his name? I forgot his name, but she couldn't wait for him. That was Guardian. What was his name? The Guardian. I'm bad with these names.
He
was protecting Gilgamesh. No. Yeah.
Sinliki Unini.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Well, there's several
like
characters.
She called him a cabbage head.
Oh no, the Guardian
head.
Was Humbaba. Humbaba was the giant of the forest, the guardian of the great sea.
No, I know that one, Humbaba. But the one that was protecting Gilgamesh and his mother. Remember when he went away and she stayed back? He was a god.
Ninurta.
There you go. I can't get that name. Ninurta. See that one?
Ninurta.
You came up with a wild name. You have like what's her name doing the voice and talking to him? Because that was the best. Like, what you called him?
Dude, I can't reproduce that. It's been so long. I don't even remember how I did it.
Oh, man. You cow. You this. You that. I'm going to strangle you.
I got to tell you, though. if people are curious, one of the things that I've done is I've created a website. You can go to Gadawa.com. That's my name, G-O-D-A-W-A. Click on the tab for Chronicles of the Nephilim. And each of the books I've casted, I literally have like pictures of the cast, of the characters, and I have descriptions. I have a bunch of artwork that's free. All of it's free. It's just really fascinating stuff. I tried to build a website that would actually fascinate people and give you hours of other exploration.
Yeah, definitely pretty
good. So there's pictures of the cast. There's pictures from the novels. And there's a bunch of research, free scholarly articles if you want to look more into it. Because like I said, even though a lot of my stuff is fictional, it's based on real historical and mythological research.
Gilgamesh had blue eyes too, Brian, right? Pretty interesting. Oh, I see you have it. Okay, all right. You got a trailer here. Oh, this is pretty good stuff. So I start from the back, you know.
Not a good start starting at book three.
Book three. So you do public speaking and stuff like that. Where do you do public speaking at?
Well, sometimes Christian colleges will have me come and speak about storytelling in movies and how to integrate. I talk a lot in churches and in colleges and Christian colleges about how to integrate your faith with storytelling and with movies and stuff, because, you know, I think that's really relevant in today's world. I think personally that stories, narrative, is the most powerful way to communicate a worldview and truth to people, because a lot of people time into, you know, rational arguments, logical arguments, they're more entertained and they get their ideas from the movies they watch and the songs they listen to. So I really want to be able to embody my Christian worldview within the stories I tell in an entertaining way. And then that's how people can really learn and grow in their faith.
Now, can you be into something like these conspiracy theories but still be a Christian? Could that be possible to still believe in Jesus?
Yeah, because
like that?
Look, I'm on a lot of your podcast isn't the only one. Podcasts that Christians have, and they're into the conspiracy theory stuff, you know, but they're from a Christian perspective. So of course you can. Of course you can. Honestly, I think that there's a danger in becoming too obsessed with it, and there's a lot of other important things in life as well to get into. However, of course, there's a lot of Christians.
He basically said just start a new podcast and get rid of the conspiracy theories.
Start following the Yankees in the playoffs. New York Yankees, man. Where are you right now, Brian? Where do you live?
I'm in Los Angeles.
L.A., all right. Dodgers.
Ooh, maybe we'll see you in the finals.
Yeah, I'm not a big sports guy, unfortunately, so I spend all my time reading novels and watching movies.
We'll go into a little bit. Now, you talk about...
I'll tell you what, if I have any commitment, I'm a born and bred Chicago boy, so the Bears and the Cubs. The Bears and the Cubs.
Okay, you got one last year. Good. That's finally. now looking at the day and age now, this is just an opinion and stuff like that. Looking at today's day and age with the hurricanes, tornadoes, fires burning everywhere, could this be a sign in your eyes of what you talk about in some of these books towards the end of times, maybe? Could this be? Or...
Buck, you are just now opening the biggest can of worms. We have to have
a whole
other thing, but I'm telling you.
What the buck?
Yeah, what the buck? Because my next series is called Chronicles of the Apocalypse, and I tell new stories about the Book of Revelation, but I go back into history, and I talk about the origin of where the Book of Revelation came from and what it meant in the ancient world. And yes, a lot of people do believe we're in the end times, but my surprising shock to most Christians is much of what they think is supposed to be in our future actually already occurred. And my new series, Chronicles of the Apocalypse, it's on my website, launches you into that whole world.
You can go to it. It's easy to go to it. It's GODAWA.com. You can get your books at audio any place, I'm sure, because I got it on audio.com.
Amazon.
Well, that's Amazon. Audio is Amazon.
You can get Kindle, ebook.
Yeah,
paperback.
And you did all your stuff, right? You did all the audiobooks, narrated and stuff like that. You did everything.
Wow.
I do. I do.
Yeah, that's great. So next time, down the line, I'm going to have you back on, and hopefully I can have John more educated on the Bible part of it, and it's a lot of fun. Even if I'm going to brainwash him a little bit of this conspiracy stuff. I'm sorry, Brian, but I'm going to have to open him up with some of that stuff. But it's fun. We have fun. And thank you. I really appreciate, you know, because I'm not somebody who reads the Bible and really, like, deep into it, because it's a difficult thing to do for somebody who doesn't know how to, you know, define these words and look at it that way. No one ever taught me nothing. I'm pretty much YouTube educated, which is not good. It's kind of bad in a way. You know what I mean?
I'm glad you realized that, Buck.
But I'm telling the truth, you know? I'm definitely telling the truth. You know, I'm looking for the everlasting gobstopper, but no, I want to live forever too, like Gilgamesh. And I was trying to melt down my wife's jewelry and stuff to make it into a powder and then drink it. I think that moment was it then? No way, I think drank some of that stuff. That's why he lived to 990 something years old. That's amazing. She must have really cooked well for that Noah, right?
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, man. And anybody wants to check out your stuff, you can go right to Brian Godawa's website. I appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure talking to you, Brian.
All right, we'll talk to you. So hopefully down the line, get you back on. Thank you so much, man. All right.
Okay. Are we cut? Hey, John?
Yeah, no, hold on a second. You're still on. We're still on. Hold on a second. We just cut it off.
Yeah. John, I'll send you a free book, too, of any one of my books you want in any format.
Sweet. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Just tell me. Yeah. Just email me and let me, like, go to my website and email me and tell me which book you want. I'll send you any book in any format.
Brian,
I think I'm going to undo like book, and I'll start at book one.
Okay.
And I want book four, buddy. You know
what
that.
Format
Thank
do you
so
want,
much.
John?
John, what
format?
I guess probably a PDF file or something like that.
Okay.
Something like a read.
I'll get a PDF. Sure, I could do that. And then what's your email?
Yeah, just email to me, and I'll forward it to him. It's cool. I'll just forward right over to him.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thank
guys,
you so much.
Thanks a bunch.
Brian. Good
thanks,
day.
Brian.
Check out Gilgamesh was
bye-bye.
Awesome stuff, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was Brian Godawa. He's author, award-winning author, actually the religious side of it. So for all you guys out there that wanted to tune into some conspiracy stuff, I couldn't really get it out of him. I tried.
You tried.
I really tried, man.
You're sticking a fork in him. He wouldn't budge.
Nah, he didn't like it at all. But this stuff right here is, and I'll talk to John, just fucking John, so it's going to be what the fuck. I got a guy really that you're going to like next week. All right? It's really, really good. His name is Nick Redfern, and he's from the hit show Ancient Aliens. So exactly what Brian was talking about, we're going to bring on next week, and we're going to dip in. This guy has done so many books on alien science, alien, the military. I like aliens, man. I really do. I'm sorry, you know, the fallen angels and stuff like that. I like it. But I relate it. Here's the difference. I relate it to aliens, and I like that because it's interesting. But I don't want to tell you that the Bible is not God. That's not what I'm telling you. But I like the angle of what if there is a God out there, and we travel to different planets, right? Say we travel to different planets. So why not say other species or things can come to this planet? Here's an example. For every Earth-like planet, right, there is. Every Earth-like planet is like one grain of sand across the whole beach. So for every Earth-like planet, there's a grain of sand. So for every grain of sand, there's an Earth-like planet out there. And it goes on forever. The universe will just goes on and on, infinity. It doesn't stop. Now, are you telling me that there's not any kind of life out there? I mean, maybe they didn't invent spaceships yet to come and travel places, but at a human being or something like intelligent-wise, at an infinity, there's got to be at least a handful that can go somewhere and travel.
There's got to be something. I mean,
no, but I understand, but this is what I want you to look with open mind. I don't want you to say, yeah, yeah, Buck, you're right, yeah, yeah. No, I want you to say, no, but I don't agree with that. There's not. Or if you feel that way, you just say it. I'm not looking to tell you, or any listener, I'm not listening to teach anybody anything. It's just to bring a story. It's entertainment, stuff like that. Brian was bringing his aspect of how the Bible, he relayed the text to himself and how he took it as to God. And he took two stories. Gilgamesh is almost like a poem. It's like writing a novel, right? But they found out Gilgamesh was a real person.
Okay.
He was somebody that they thought was just, like you said, Braveheart or Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's that kind of trilogy.
Today's The Rock?
Yeah, pretty much. He's The Rock where we throw a cherry over his chest and he pops it. I can't do that. But it's like that kind of thing where, but then they discovered a tomb with inscribings of King Gilgamesh, the something, blah, 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 and they found the tomb. So it's like, for example, it's like the giant octopus, right? I don't know what it's called. The big giant octopus that they didn't think it was real. They had a name for it. Kraken or something like that. People swore that it attacked ships and stuff like that. They just found about a couple, 20-something years ago, that the giant octopus does exist. So there's stuff out there that we have. I mean, especially the ocean, we only discovered 5% of the ocean. We don't know what the hell is down there, you know what I'm saying? So this is fun. It's going to be like, don't take it as something to be truth. No, but it's having fun, different angles and different stuff. And we'll bring guests on that will sometimes listeners are going to listen and say, this guy's full of shit. Like, it cannot be possible. Like last week here, for example, we had a guy named Phil Schneider. We had Darcy Weir and Lee Lustig. We had them on. They did a documentary on Phil Schneider. He claims he works for the government, building military bases, underground military bases, which is kind of like, okay, you can kind of, you know, bunkers or stuff like that. If something ever happened, nuclear war or something like that, they would have to go somewhere to be secure, right? The government or rich people, I'm sure. So he said that he was building underground bases, drilling like you would drill subway stations, kind of. Turning drills and stuff like that. He went down, they were digging down about 2 miles, about 2 miles, he says, and it kept on jamming up. And there was some kind of soot coming out. So they're like, what's going on? Let's go check this out. As they're getting lowered down by an elevator or whatever the hell they had, some pulley, whatever. He didn't say that, Phil Schneider. I don't know what the hell he had. But when he got to the bottom of it, there was a 7-foot gray aliens down there. I've always thought gray aliens were small, like little small, the big head, ET. You know, I never. But he said he took his gun and shot two of them. And then one of them, like, rubbed his hand over his chest, and a beam came out and, like, burnt his fucking arm off or some shit like that, whatever. Do I believe it? I don't know, you know, but it's fun.
It's something, definitely something to listen to.
I'm telling you.
Hear someone's story and what they got to say and what facts they have behind it.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, like, say, the Yankee game last night. You see DD, he hit two home runs. That's fact. Like, you saw him hit two home runs, right? Or whatever. But, and CC pitching, I think CC could pitch like that. I turn him one hitter in 5 innings. I'm a Mets fan, so John's a Yankee fan, so he's, like, loving it now. I'm a Ranger fan, too, but they suck, too. Jets, 3-2.
I hate the Giants. Giants.
None of the above. Okay, anyway, but I'm going to talk about stuff on this podcast that just enjoy listening to it. Don't take it as truth. I'm not out here telling you any facts. This is all fun, man. This ain't even, a lot of it's not even an opinion. So we're going to research different things. Next week, I'm going to try for Nick Redfern. I think you're going to like him, man, because he tells a lot of different everything. I'll send you the links and stuff like that. You'll like it. Thank you. What was his name? Yeah, look at that. I forgot. Brian Godawa. Check out his website. Brian, I think it's godawa.com. GODAWA. This is John. Oh, well, this is Buck, and this is John. Yeah, let's join us for the first time. So I'm going to get him to speak more as we go along. Loosen up a little bit and I'll just unbutton the top shirt. top button of the shirt, but we're going to have fun. I think we're going to have a lot.
I think it's going to be a blast. I think maybe by the end of this, I'm going to have to get rid of the B and put an F in there, because some of these stories, I think, are just going to be crazy.
Yeah, they're going to be crazy, definitely. You're going to enjoy it, but thank you for tuning in. This is Buck, and this is
Gianni Gunks, and it's been a pleasure. I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, and listen, he's a good softball player here, so I thought maybe I could get you on so I can get some more game umpiring next year to make a play, but we'll see what happens. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Have a good night, bro.
Good night.
Listen, how about a little, remember this song? I got to get a little music. Here you go.
Okay, so guitar. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-tip.
Where were you going? Who were you going?
Wait, we'll go my turn.
Left my wallet in the quest.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to the Buck Gritano Podcast, and you'll tune in again next time. If you have a question, comment, suggestion, or an idea for a future topic, send us an email. We will get to it. Thanks again for listening to the Buck Gritano Podcast. We'll see you next time. Big Apple Elevator Service is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, family-owned and operated elevator maintenance and repair company. We'll provide you with the best service possible with a 1-hour response time for any trouble calls you may have. We also perform all Category 1 and 5 tests that are required in New York and clear any existing violations so your elevators are safe and up to code. Call 212-279-0700. 212-279-0700.